has been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
Welcome to Friday morning, everyone. This is the February 19th edition of the Best Stocks Now. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill this Friday morning. Also joining us, we've got our bond portfolio manager and investment advisor here at the firm, Mr. Paul Carlson. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Barry. How are you today?
Doing good, doing good. I imagine you got an eye on some of the economic news that's kind of popping in at the moment. But how was the week?
It was a great week. We had a really nice dinner at Oak with Bill and his lovely wife. Business is good and, helping a lot of people achieve their goals. So,
It was nice to do that. And, of course, getting a compressed week this week. So it's been a pretty blistering pace with a shortened trading week. Of course, we've got China back open. They're back from the week break from New Year's. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. We also, of course, I know our folks in Texas. Send our thoughts and prayers out to them in cold ridden Texas. Talking to the guys at the station, and they've been held up there for days. I think he said one guy finally left after being there most of the weekend. So. I know
really spoken, tough. Yes.
You discussed it. I think you spoke to some too, but I had a couple clients over in San Antonio. No water for 4 days. Of course, it's tough to find a plumber, right? Kind of like a roofer in hurricanes, right?
Well, I think the whole system's down in terms of the running water.
I know there's some pipes bursting on one side of the street and not on the other. I remember as a kid we had a big hurricane Opal in 95, and we happened to live on the corner, so the first thing they turned on is street lights, right? And so we had power. No one else in the entire neighborhood had power, so you almost felt guilty. You didn't want to turn on the front porch at that time. But yeah, so that's kind of been a very interesting story in terms of how it's affected the markets over this week. You've got in your world, NRG has been under pressure. During these times, there's always kind of a blame game and just kind of reassessing, what's going on in terms of grid. And, I didn't realize that Texas was on there, kind of on an island, if you will, in terms of their power. It just never really occurred to me. I know, certainly familiar with the independence nature of the state itself, but I didn't realize that was actually a thing. So. Saw the CEO for Southern company. They actually presented earnings yesterday and spoke to some of the outages and then kind of a blend of both renewable energy and regular power plants, right? Because you have if you're doing wind power, you get ice on the windmill. You can't turn it. Also. Just with gas and other things.
Yeah, that's a small percentage of the power.
Yeah, exactly.
Very small.
But it's a GM and Ford. They've cutting factory production all the way across, not just in Texas, but also Spring Hill, Tennessee, which is actually close to where I lived in Nashville for 12 years. Bowling Green, Kentucky. So just all across the South, kind of a. Deep freeze, which is gonna trickles down. We saw it in the oil price impact, where you're gonna have refineries are shut down.
We're over 60 a barrel.
Yep. So it's weather events, just like hurricanes and other things, kind of playing into the markets. On it's kind of been a kind of a flat, you know, relatively a little bit down week, but you know, in terms of news, there hasn't really been a ton of earnings news or a ton of you know, just huge economic news this week. But we do have the PMI numbers. We've got the
which are pretty
sales.
Decent. Yeah, set that too. Yeah,
I think we got some good news on that front. You want to catch us up on the markets first, Paul, and global markets and kind of where we're at, and then we can get into some of the PMI numbers if we've got some time.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to start global? I have the domestic in front.
Yeah. Start with the domestic.
The
we're off to
a good start. Yeah, S&P 500 up 11.25 points at 3,925. That's about a third of 1%. The Dow 30 also up a third of a percent, 101 points at 31,594. The NASDAQ up almost a half a percent, 63 points, 13,928. Small cap Russell 2000 index up 1.2%. That's 27 points to 22.45. And then, as we mentioned, crude oil over 60. It's at 60.27 the barrel. And then with the precious metals, they've just turned positive after being lower this morning. We've got gold up $11 the ounce at 17.86. Silver up 45 the ounce at 27.53. And then the all-important 10-year, we're at 1.32 on the yield. Keeps moving a little bit higher.
And, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, that's been kind of a theme, and it looks
higher.
Looks like Europe, Europe's up, you know, a little bit more around about 0.7%. They had some positive news, I think, in the manufacturing PMI for
mm-hmm.
Germany. Kind of some disappointing retail sales in on the London. Numbers that came out today in the UK, and so for that's kind of to be expected. Certainly, they've been under a pretty vigorous lockdown, in the UK. So,
although the FTSE's a little higher this morning, it's up a third of a percent, 20 points, 6,637. And then a little weakness over in Asia. Japan down about 1%. China down 0.25%. Hong Kong down 0.75%, and Australia down almost 1.5%. Lower than expected retail sales there as well. So
yeah, that I was looking. I was looking through some of their data this morning, because they had, their retail sales, I think, grew 0.6%, and I think they thought it was supposed to be 2%. So that's a bit of a miss there. In terms of like I said, it was a pretty quiet week in China. I did see something, Bill's been hitting on in terms of commodities. I saw where, iron ore prices at the best level since 2011 on China post-holiday demand. But that's a pretty relevant, one of our names, Vail, that we own in the dividend and growth portfolio. They're certainly a beneficiary of those prices. Rio, BHP,
Rio Tinto.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's some interesting news in terms of, as we keep seeing this growth pick up, right? Which kind of plays into these PMI numbers, right? The PMI numbers are pretty, pretty strong. I've got them here. I'm just scrolling over to them. Yeah, we had.
Well, and I'll add that lumber's on an all-time high as well. And, you see that in housing prices, which were collected, I believe, kind of trickling through. So, but go ahead with the PMI.
Yeah, with the PMI, was signaled the fastest growth in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
that's a positive sign for recovery, right? We've got, 58.8 for February. That's versus 57.9 consensus, and is also 58.7 prior. It was actually revised up from 57.9. So services came in at 58.9
mm-hmm.
versus consensus was 57.7. Also, that service number revised up from per prior month. Manufacturing, and this is kind of where some weather can come into play. Also, some of the lockdowns are around the country. But manufacturing PMI came in at 58.5. I think consensus was 59. It was revised up 0.1 from the prior to 59.2. But still a very strong number.
Yeah, and I did see that the managers noted stronger client demand. So I think you're right. It's just some of those constraints with the weather and so forth that sort of pulled that number down slightly.
Yeah, right. And we've seen a lot of manufacturing inputs in terms of chips, and we'll get into some of the semiconductor news when we get back. But it's just to me, it's a positive sign for the recovery, and we're just getting started here. Our best stocks now, and we'll be back for the second quarter. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now Hour with your hosts Barry Kite and Paul Carlson, sitting in for our captain Bill Gunderson today. Good morning,
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, he's working on the newsletter, which you can get at GundersonCapital.com. Get a 2-week free trial there if you sign up.
Yes, it's valuable information.
Very useful tool.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think so as well. Looking at where we're at, so in the market at last week, we had the 14,000 number thrown out there while we were actually hosting the show on Friday, right? So looks like a bit below that, may finish the week below that number, but it's all looking at the charts there in the technical analysis section. I think is very, very helpful. At least it gives you perspective on where we've been and kind of what's happened in terms of support levels as we continue to kind of hit these all-time highs and kind of creep up. It makes for a positive looking chart in reality. Another positive thing, we've got some good relatively good news. Like we said, the PMI looks to be fastest growth in 6 years, so that's going to help push that recovery view of the market, right? That's when we see where we're at, especially some of the valuations, PE valuations that Bill's been referring to in terms of being elevated, certainly historically high. We've got to kind of contrast that against the fact that we're at very low interest rates, but I could see the possibilities for some good upside surprises on the earnings front going forward, and we've seen it.
Well, we had one today, which will be the stock of the day later,
right?
Of last quarter of the show.
Yeah, and I think it's positive that it's not just in these EV companies or in the semiconductor companies, which we'll get into in just a bit, but they've been great for us and great for the market as a whole and our portfolios. But don't want to spoil it too much, but it's in a interesting part of the economy, and I think it will help shows the broad based recovery that we're looking at. That's kind of PMI kind of gives us gives us a look into. As well as the existing home sales, like you said, the pretty positive number continues to strengthen in January. Looks like existing home sales were up 0.6% to
the highest since 2006.
Is that it? In a lot of instances, you don't like being compared back to that time frame, but we'll take it as a positive for today. So,
low rates can do,
Right? Yeah, and also lumber prices, right? It's new construction is going to be more expensive, so it's going to kind of may lend more to existing home sales as well. So. It's kind of a big feedback loop to a certain extent, but 6.69 million versus 6.6 consensus. So came in 90 above, 90 million above. Of course, the previous number was revised downward, you know, right at about, I think it was about 0.11. And so we got, you know, kind of basically an even between December and January, kind of, you know, just strengthening numbers, like you said, since 2006. So that's positive. Another retail e-commerce numbers came in. Sales were down 1.2% in Q4. I think consensus was down 1%. So not much off from that perspective. The one thing I do kind of see here that I think is very unique, and it actually talks to kind of opportunity going forward, is that in Q4, e-commerce sales accounted for 14% of total sales. So if you think about it, you know, 14% of total sales in the market, you know, that it just shows you that the opportunity, even with, you know, COVID and what it's done in terms of picking up your groceries, right, in the in the drive-through lanes, that type of thing. So, you know, we've had a big push towards, you know, I've read some numbers about how many people made their first, you know, internet purchase in 2020. And so seeing that, and, you know, just goes to show you maybe some of these valuations are do make sense, because there's a huge, huge, you know, market penetration there.
Sure.
With only having 14%.
Yeah, and back on the prices that we talked about, I noticed yesterday we had the import prices that came out, and that was a jump of 1.4% in January. Just wanted to make a note of that.
Yeah, and does that hedge out currency, or I would imagine as a kind of weakening dollar, to it's going to make
right. So you have the weakening
dollar.
Make
those imports more expensive, but I don't know if they strip out the dollar, right? Well, then you're getting kind of, I guess, a true version of inflation, even though real inflation would include the dollar drop on that.
Necessarily get passed through either. So it's,
exactly,
all those factors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. And then, kind of interesting piece yesterday, and we just so happened to talk about it last week, but the Biden executive order, essentially draft, they're working on that draft still. It authorizes semiconductor supply chain review as shortage continues. So another one of the along those lines of they're huge, and it's starting to get more and more play in the financial press, but the huge mismatch between supply and demand for computer chips of all kinds. It's
right.
not just on the highest tech end, but even on even on some of the older technology, some of the big chip makers that are Applied actually had reported yesterday, and they did very very well. NVIDIA actually releases some processors that they were using, they were for crypto mining amid a GPU shortage. So that's another chip shortage, right? We keep hearing in the electric vehicle space, but also in the computers that mine cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin. There's a lot of computing power that goes into that, and so those chips are, of course, as Bitcoin goes up and other cyber currencies goes up, well, that's going to increase demand for those mining tools.
That's right. Yeah, good point there on the Bitcoin.
Yeah, so that's as it plays out, just supply and demand mismatch doesn't automatically mean that they're going to benefit from a price increase immediately. Usually these contracts are about 12 months in advance, so we might actually see that earnings bump and that earnings growth that we're looking for until later into the later into the year, so or even next year when they're doing some repricing. But we'll get into some bond news with Paul and look at some other factors from Janet Yellen yesterday when we come back on the second half of Best Stocks Now. And welcome back here to the second half of the Best Docs Now Radio Hour. With your host today, I'm Barry Kite, and our bond manager, Paul Carlson, on the line. And we're playing the role of sitting in for Bill today while he's getting a jump start on the newsletter. Happy to have the opportunity to talk to a lot of clients and potential clients this week. And one topic that I think you and I talked about at dinner too was questions on inflation, dollar. You know, how long can debts can be sustained, right? Just a lot of the topics that financial topics that have kind of flown over into or
macro
over,
questions,
and spilled over into normal nightly news, right? A lot of times talking deficits and inflation and dollar weakness, right? And currencies, that's usually for financial television, but when you're getting into some of the amounts and just some of the importance of whether it's stimulus or potential tax hikes, right? With some of the ramifications of these current situations.
Well, I was hearing that
rather than
raising rates, that they're going to increase enforcement in terms of having more audits of high net worth individuals, and that should raise quite a bit of revenue. And that's
right.
Kind of the logic right now.
Okay. Yeah. It's from a currency standpoint, right? I've always looked to kind of the bond guys as the smart guys in terms of the kind of giving you a sense of what the market's going to look like going forward, right? A lot of times, the bond market's much, much bigger. And there's a lot of different players, and it just attracts the way the macro view, right? That kind of feeds into interest rate policy. It gives a special insight I've seen usually on the fixed income space. But Jeff Gundlach of AKA Bond King, right?
The new Bond King.
Yeah, the new one. Right.
After Bill Gross. Yeah.
Right. Yep. And so, essentially turning kind of positive on Bitcoin. That was in the news. Of course, Bitcoin continues to rise as an asset. And when we think of inflation, right, we think of, we always think of gold. Of course, gold doesn't always act, like it should. There's just so many different factors involved with gold as an asset. But, he's kind of making the point that, Bitcoin is kind of the new gold in terms of, just that it's, kind of acting, like it should in terms of as a potential inflation hedge down the road. So, kind of some interesting notes there. I know Yellen actually gave some kind of some thoughts on inflation, certainly in regards to the stimulus package, given that she's heading up the Treasury now. But she made the point and when you look back at it, this inflation talk has kind of been gone on for an extended period of time, right? I mean, remember when, I guess in 2010, right, it's like, we need to buy TIPS protected treasuries. And, it was just inflation just never, or at least the way we calculate inflation, right? It just never hasn't
materialized
really,
enough. Yeah,
it's kind of been the, kind of a ghost out there.
About this, you have all these people that are behind on their rent that could turn into foreclosures, and then you could actually have some price deflation.
Right. Yep. And certainly in those key assets.
In key assets. That's right.
Right. Yep. And that's and the good point is, I saw actually today what's the opposite, right? So the opposite is, something, think of Japan. Right. And where, I saw, I think their CPI was negative today. Let's see. I've got it actually here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Japan's January core consumer prices declined 0.6%. year over year, right? And the forecast, it actually came in better than expected. They thought it was going to be a 0.7% drop. So, you know, that's the opposite of inflation, and deflation is, you know, is actually in many ways worse than actual inflation. Because the thought process there is, you know, I'll just buy it tomorrow and it'll be cheaper, right? And essentially, you never make the purchase, right? So, but that's, you know, so the my point being is, you can have low rates, you can have, you know, higher deficits for longer. Certainly, as the entire
Japan led the way on that one,
and the world, you know, and the entire world's doing, you know, kind of the same playbook at this point. So, you know, your average debt load, right, or debt to GDP, in my guess, probably hasn't, the distribution probably hasn't changed that much. Yeah, the numbers are higher, but it's probably, to me, it would seem like a movement across the board. And as we continue to say, I mean, you know, to me, the U.S. and, you know, and China are positioned, you know, the best around the globe, whether it's through, you know, vaccine, whether it's through growth verticals around the globe, right? We'll be the ones to grow out, you know, fastest. Certainly,
probably doing a lot of infrastructure spending, given what's going on in Texas.
Yeah, and that's the next. That was kind of the next piece. Is, you know, of course, the first stimulus hasn't passed yet, but Yellen actually spoke to the, a second economic recovery package later in the year. That one, of course, like you said, would focus on longer term investments, you know, infrastructure, renewable energy. That's kind of where the electric vehicle play has been, certainly since, was booming leading up to, you know, an anticipated, you know, potential Biden win, right? And then, once that happened, you know, that this, you know, this rise in electric vehicles, renewable energy has just continued to pick up steam. So that's kind of where the, you know, money hits the road, right, at that point, no pun intended. But on the renewable energy piece, you've got to have that, you know, government intervention in terms of putting that money into those particular assets in a structured way, right? You know, that's, like it or not, that's one reason in terms of, you know, planned economics, you know, as a dictatorship in China, right? They can easily, dictate how and how industries will create, what, you know, what to fund and what not to fund, right? In terms of an actual planned, not a free market, if you will, but, you know, it's very efficient in terms of, you know, getting that infrastructure in place. Of course, you get the old stories from, you know, decade ago where they'd build a complete city and there was, you know, nobody living
there. No one there. As long as they get it right.
Right. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, it's important. We do need some type of infrastructure bill. You know, what that is, you know, I don't know. I'm always a bit skeptical in terms of, what's the incentive, right, for a politician in general, regardless of the aisle you're on, right? It's, you know, you're in there for 2 years or you're in there for six. You know, if we're, you know, you just look around in your local city on how long it takes to put in some a new interstate, or, you know, we've got interstate projects that have been going on for 10, 15 years, certainly where I'm from out in Florida and I-10. So, you know, if you have having
the big dig in Boston was probably what, 2 or 3 decades.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And made and broke, political careers along the way. But
sure.
It's just tough for me to, you know, to, from a politician standpoint to, you know, to push for them to push for, you know, say some, you know, project that has a 20-year benefit because, their incentives, personal incentives, aren't really aligned with that. So hopefully,
right.
And I think that's why it's taken so long to get any type of true infrastructure bill over the years. So hopefully that happens. They're also trying to put some money into job training, research and development. As Powell, Chairman Powell mentioned recently, the longer someone's out of work, right, the less chance there is for them to get back into, at least be fully employed like they were initially, right? Because diminishing skills, you've got other people, recent college graduates or, you know, recent
younger,
additions
fresher,
to the workforce,
the latest,
right?
You know,
immigration playing into that, right? And so, that piece, you know, getting folks back to work and getting that stimulus in place quick is a big reason, and that's going to help speed up that recovery on the back end. But we'll see where they get to. We know something's coming at some point. So, but we'll finally get to our best stocks now stock of the day, and when we come back for the last quarter of today's show. It's been a fast one. And welcome back here to the fourth and final quarter of the Best Stocks Now Hour. I am Barry Kite, and we have our bond guru, Paul Carlson, here for the final segment of the week. And pretty excited about this this choice here, right, Paul?
Yeah, stock of the day. Very exciting.
Yeah.
We had earnings come out, and it's really kind of blown the doors off the numbers that were estimated. So I don't know if we want to start there or.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd like to kind of frame it up in terms of, in terms of our investment selection process, right? It's,
Sure.
When you look at it, it's, everything's tech or, everything's so, growth, you're traditional or new growth oriented, right? In terms of EV or, is it actually earnings growth or is it just revenue growth, right? In some of these high tech businesses, and then also it's nice to come kind of get back to some of the bellwethers here and there, right? And so
diversify in different sector,
Yeah, and so the stock of the day is Deere and Company, also known as John Deere. Stock's currently up 9.8%. Having a big day, huge earnings blowout. I think they beat earnings by $1.70, which is
It was $3.87 beat by $1.70. That's correct.
Yeah, which is
And the revenue also beat big time. It was $8.05 billion. That's up 23.3% year over year, and that beat by $930 million. The full year earnings forecast has increased to 4.6 from 4.6 to 5 billion, and like Barry said, stock's up about 10%, around $3.30 a share.
Well, the interesting thing to me is we own it in Premier Growth, right? And it's
right.
You think of that with other names in there like Pinduoduo, ServiceNow. Microsoft, mm-hmm. right? And then you blend in, you look down the list, and I remember when we first added it, it was looks a little odd sitting in there with some of the other names, right? I think
mm-hmm.
Alphabetically it's between Chipotle and JD.com. So,
we're unconstrained, so we go where the action is, right?
Yeah, so. That was kind of my point. It's really unique, and when you look at the numbers, when you kind of dive into it, and of course on our Best Stocks Now app, the stock's rated. Let's see, we've got it.
It's 347 today.
Yeah,
even a month ago, it showed up as 111 out of 5,635.
Yeah,
in the database. So,
and 3 months ago, it was essentially in the top 10% almost.
Quite a while ago to start looking at that. So
stock has got it as a buy, A minus. Ranking of 347, and it's just in all with a beta of below 1.97. On the beta, so it's actually less risk than the market, and it's actually. Actually 2021, yep, for year to date up 11.6%. That's before today. So add another 10
and,
to that.
The
market's up,
still
market's
pretty,
up about
4%.
So
right. Yeah, the peg ratio 1.2. We'd like it to be below one, but, you know, it's still pretty good.
Yeah, certainly with today's valuations, you take what you can get, right?
Yeah, and with a five-year price target of 593, of course, there's no guarantees, but, you know, that's based on our growth rate, which is probably going to be increasing here as we recalculate. But that's showing at 16% for the five-year annual growth rate.
Yeah, and looking
here,
the
value grades an A as well. So, yeah.
Right. Well, analyst expectations are going to be ratcheted up as well because you know, just kind of diving into the numbers, they, you know, their net income for the quarter more than doubled to $1.22 billion. All their segments were, you know, over 20% positive. I mean, you've got precision agriculture. That's the tech, you know, big tech side of deer, up 22%. Small agriculture and turf sales were up 27%, and construction and forestry sales were up 21%. So the in terms of guiding net income, I think they're guiding between 4.6 and 5 billion. I think consensus it's almost half a billion more. Than was consensus. So my guess is that that growth rate will jump as well, and that's gonna bump up obviously them up the rankings here on the app. And I just think, like I said, it's kind of a unique name that we just kind of pull out of the process. You've got, you know, all these other shiny objects right out there, whether it's in the electric vehicle space, right, or the chip space, or we've got some, you know, chip testing equipment makers that haven't been relevant for years and are kind of back in the mix, you know, and then we slap John Deere right down there in the middle. So it's just kind of gives you an idea of how changing markets, changing investment environments, right?
And it's,
we'll,
we've got to
kind of adapt as we go along. Yeah,
right.
And Vail's another one, right? That's one.
Yeah,
you know.
Vail. Sure. So. Market of stocks, not necessarily a stock market. So
yeah, probably. And you can find out, you know, we'll, like I said, we can find out more in the newsletter. Go to GundersonCapital.com. You can sign up for it there. Also, peruse Seeking Alpha. Lots of information and still some relevant thoughts on. Lots of articles.
Search on Gunderson. You'll see the articles that, you know, Bill and Barry have written.
Yeah. And
if you want to talk with us, yeah, give us a call, 855-611-BEST. Set up an appointment with Edie, and we're happy to do a portfolio review, see what you have now, see how we might be able to help you out. Anything you want to add to that, Barry?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of those I've talked to a lot of folks lately who, you know, have kind of been in cash and are kind of, you know, still kind of waiting or figuring out when to get back in, as we all know, you know, when you go to cash, it's really two decisions, when to get out and when to get back in. So, you know, our style of kind of feathering, letting the market dictate how quickly we want to implement a strategy or in the names we want to own, you know, I think it's key. And just in kind of dipping your toes back in the water and getting some allocation where you need it anyway. So just appreciate all the confidence in everyone out there and hope you enjoyed it and have a great weekend. And we'll be back on Monday, or we'll be back here on Monday. So
take care, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.